KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, behind the scenes of Comedy Central's raunchy Celebrity Roasts. They've sent up and torn down David Hasselhoff, Pamela Anderson, and Flavor Flav, to name a few. On Tuesday, they roast Donald Trump. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined by Kim Masters' regular banter buddy from the Los Angeles Times, John Horn. Hello, John.
Hello, Matt.
So today's banter is going to start with none other than Muammar Gaddafi. And let me explain. Last May, Kim talked with Matty Beckerman, who was a guy who was starting a film company. And he ended up finding financing for his company from one Saadi El Gaddafi. He was one of Muammar Gaddafi's sons. This guy had been traveling around the Middle East looking for financing for his company from like every fake shake out there until he met this guy who's 35 years old, who's a former soccer player, and his name was Saadi. It turned out to be Saadi Gaddafi. And what's interesting is that Beckerman is a Jewish kid from New Jersey, but, you know, when he talked with Kim about Saadi Gaddafi, he had only good things to say. I want to play a little tape.
Saadi having his backing at this moment, I can't imagine a better situation. Even though it comes with its pitfalls and it comes with its negative perception, we're going to get past those because he himself is a really good person. And I sit him down in the room with people, and they've met him. I brought Graham Taylor to meet him from Endeavor, William Morris Endeavor, he and his wife. We had dinner. We had a wonderful time. I brought in Toronto. We had a big party up there. 50 Cent performed privately for us. A lot of people met Saadi there. You get to know him. You understand that he's not his father. That he's really, a genuine, good-natured, great person. And my partnership with him is going to show that, you can do business with Libya.
I guess he wasn't quite right about that, was he, Matt?
No, that was an interview from May 31st on The Business. And if you go to our website at kcrw.com/thebusiness, you can hear the whole interview. But yeah, they clearly did not get past it. And in fact, Saadi Gaddafi has been speaking very vehemently in defense of his father during the tumultuous time in Libya. So natural selection, Matty Beckerman's company, seems to have kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. In fact, Michael Sipley's written a great article in the New York Times called Hollywood Feels Ripples from Libya.
To me, it's a fantastic story. I hate to say that about a rival, but it's a really good piece. And I think it really dramatizes two things. It dramatizes how quickly Hollywood will run to money, even if it's somewhat borderline. And more important, how quickly they'll run in the other direction if they think it's a bad relationship to be in.
There's a great little image in the story. Outside the company's suite on Sunset Boulevard, there's a parking spot identified as Natural Selections that is now blocked by a battered white van with four flat tires. What is also interesting is that Natural Selection has been involved in a couple of films that were on the road to distribution, and suddenly their names are being scratched left and right. Now, this is kind of an interesting and story in and of itself, but to me, what it really goes to is the fact that Hollywood really is willing to work with anybody.
I guess it's like the old maxim of your check clears, you're welcome here. I mean, you can talk about Ely Samaha and Franchise Pictures. I mean, David Begelman, who's a former studio chief who was caught in a check forgery scam, kept his job.
I think of Mel Gibson now, that even though, shortly after he was shown to be a somewhat unsavory character, people are still very much willing to work with him in Hollywood.
Well, and I think we have to bring in your favorite actor, Charlie Sheen, Matt, who, abused women, was using drugs, hiring hookers. CBS didn't care. I mean, they kept him working on Two and a Half Men. But when he insulted the boss, that's where he lost his job. So I think it's proof that Hollywood's moral compass does not always point north. It points whatever direction is convenient at that time.
Yeah, I think Hollywood needs a GPS. And speaking of direction and new directions, Warner Brothers has let it be known that they're going to try a new direction to distribute The Dark Knight.
on Facebook, no less. It's an interesting idea. I mean, Warner Brothers theory is interesting, too. It's not Social Network. That's going to be the first film on Facebook, but it's going to be The Dark Knight.
Right.
In any case, it's not terribly expensive. It's going to be about $3. And I think Warner's is looking at Facebook. Millions of people go there every day. I go on and play Scramble once or twice. And I think they're thinking, hey, you're on Facebook. You might rent a movie for $3. It's an interesting idea. If you've got an iPad or a computer with a good display, it's probably better than watching on your mobile phone.
Well, and you'll also be able to Facebook, if you can use that as a verb, while you're watching the movie. So you can comment on the movie and do your other Facebook stuff while you're watching the film. I would say that in almost every one of these platforms, the technology is as important as the place. I mean, I don't really watch movies on iTunes because it's kind of slow, whereas if I go to Netflix, I can watch movies immediately, or on Hulu, I can watch them immediately. So how they implement this, is, to my mind, is going to be as important as the fact that it's actually there.
I completely agree.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Matt.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. William Shatner, David Hasselhoff, Joan Rivers, Flavor Flav, Jeff Foxworthy, and Pamela Anderson. These are just a handful of the people who've had the distinct honor of having their peers tear them to shreds at a Comedy Central celebrity roast. They're mocked, skewered, and loved in that particular way that only Hollywood can do it. And Comedy Central makes beaucoup ad bucks from the whole deal.
I don't know who any of you people is. Maybe that's because I watch TV and go to the movies and read the trades.
David, I hope you've enjoyed this. I just can't tell because of your Botox. Could you blink 3 times if you had fun?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's look back at the life and times of Flavor Flav, none of which he can remember.
Of course, Comedy Central didn't invent the celebrity roast. For years, the Friars Club, a private hangout for show business types in L.A. and New York, held members-only, men-only roasts that off-color wouldn't even start to describe. And Comedy Central has done a pretty good job of staying true to the Friars' political incorrectness. Next up, Donald Trump. The roast, which was actually taped last week in front of an audience of 1,000, was the hottest ticket in New York, with people being turned away at the door. Today, we talk with Elizabeth Porter, Comedy Central's roaster-in-chief since 2005. She's the senior VP of specials and talent for Comedy Central, and of all her jobs, the roast is the event most dear to her heart. When preparing a roast, Porter's first order of business is getting a roastee, a big-namer willing to commit to a night of utter humiliation. But Porter told our host Kim Masters that a roast is also a great way for a celebrity to change their public image. For instance, when she approached David Hasselhoff, the only thing people had seen of him lately besides Baywatch reruns was his online video of him very drunk eating a hamburger. Here Kim asked Elizabeth Porter about handling that issue as she wooed the Hoff to be a roastee.
Okay, let's pretend I'm Hasselhoff, and I say, mm-hmm. You know, I would love this. You know, I haven't been doing that much lately. I had some issues, but I don't want to talk about the hamburger thing.
I would say, you know, there's no way to do this without doing that. This is a roast, and ultimately, we need to roast your entire career. You are an iconic figure. You're famous in every hut around the world. But, you know, unfortunately, the hamburger video is now famous also all around the world. So what better opportunity to show that you have a sense of humor about it, deal with it, put it right in the middle of the room, show that you've got a great sense of humor, and have the final say. And that was actually what got him to sign on. He said,
"So do
great.
You have to like handhold and say, I promise you, if we talk about the hamburger thing, you'll still be David Hasselhoff?"
A good bit. I mean, I partner with their reps, certainly, but I get very, very involved with everybody who is booked. I take my responsibility to the roastees very seriously because I don't want to walk around thinking that I've done something that was duplicitous in any way. So I definitely walk them through the whole process. I'm involved with them throughout the entire booking of the dais, all of the script writing. We really work with them on their rebuttal to be sure that they really do have the final say. If they're not comedians, we work with them to be sure that they can deliver the jokes. Even if they sign up, it's like the stages of grief. People sign up with one thing, and then it goes through. There's always moods that people hit. And right before, I don't care who you are, people get nervous. They get very, very nervous about what's going to happen. And that ends up being the, you know, look, you've got a person who you're dealing with here, and I'm here for you, and we're going to protect you in an edit. And the live show is one thing, and they are loud and raucous and insane. And ultimately, we do cut it down. And so we'll, you know, I'll talk to you about it, and I'll involve you as much as I can in the edit. So I think because they feel like they've got humans, it's not just a network, that helps.
Right.
You know.
And who is the ideal roastee? Is that a
someone
word?
Who is, it is a roastee. They are the roastee, and it's somebody who is loved. I mean, it's got to be, that's the old Friars Club saying that we only roast the ones we love. I think you have to have somebody at the center of it that is well-known, iconic, loved for enough different reasons by enough different people that people are interested in seeing them being roasted. I think if there's a truly unscathed life, it can be kind of hard, I think, because I think you've got to have things to go to.
Please welcome our guest of honor, the luckiest man and the worst entertainer in the history of show business. He's a huge one of my best friends, Bob Saget!
We've had people come to us who would like to be roasted, who I can't name. Who,
rats.
Who are, it would be a little bit of kicking somebody when they're down. And
right.
I don't think anybody wants to see that. That's
because
just,
there is an element that you're maybe not at the peak of your career if you're going to be doing this.
I think so. And mm-hmm. I think that we've tried to figure out different ways to reformat the show and do maybe even different kinds of roasts and smaller roasts because they've now become such big TV events that now, you know, just cost-wise, we can only do one or two a year because they are millions and millions of dollars. So they are big, big, big shows for us. And they carry a lot of weight because they're huge sales drivers for us. They're big events.
They're expensive because the talent.
The talent, definitely. And just putting on a show of that magnitude costs that much just in terms of set, lighting, crew, everything.
So when you're wooing, do you have to make certain promises?
Actually not. I mean, because you really do need somebody who is game. And so you need to know that somebody is in, you know, that understands what they're getting into first and foremost, knows what the format is, knows what the show is. We've never really agreed other than with Pam Anderson, she really asked that her children be, she didn't say that they were off limits, but she said that she wanted kind of a limited exposure for them on the
and
show.
And also an illness, right? Hepatitis C?
Oh, no, that was fair game.
Oh, it was
She
fair
was
game.
Actually, yeah. And people didn't hit it too hard, but that was not something. It was really her kids. Shatner was a guy who I didn't get to know well in the process. But after booking him, he called me and said, listen, my life is open, fair game, whatever you want to say. But, you know, his wife had tragically passed away. And he said, if anybody crosses the line with her, I will walk. You know, and I agreed. I said, that is just in totally poor taste. She is someone whose life tragically ended. That is beyond bad taste. And everybody respected it, which was great. I was nervous in the truck that somebody wouldn't because rooms are what they are. Comedians are who they are. And, you know, if your set's not going well and you got one in your pocket, you could throw it out and you would be forever quoted in the comedy community. I mean, these are events that comics really thrive in and
they try to out-bad each other?
They do. I mean, it's everybody wants that one great joke. Everybody wants one of the jokes that define the evening. And so they're looking for who's got it. And I was nervous. I was nervous that somebody would falter and then to save themselves, lob
flare.
One out there
mm-hmm.
just because, you know, why not? Knowing it wouldn't make air, but knowing that it would be the joke that gets quoted and nobody did.
If you're just joining us, Kim Masters is talking with Comedy Central executive Elizabeth Porter about putting on the celebrity roast. Once they've chosen a roastee, they cast the people who will actually do the roasting. The group is referred to as members of the dais.
So how do you go about setting the cast on the dais?
That is a mix. We always try to have a balance of half comedians, half friends of roastee. So there's always been kind of a stable of people that we book that in the comic world. Lisa Lampanelli is one of the best out there. Jeff Ross is the roast master. Greg Giraldo, who passed away in September, I think was one of the best at this ever. And we welcomed Whitney Cummings into that fold 2 years ago. She had actually been writing for us for a couple of years. And we put her on the dais for Joan, and she, you know, for many people, stole the show. So we always want to have a balance of people that we know that we can go to who will deliver. You know, these comics are the finest at what they do. And, you know, we're going to really miss Greg Giraldo this year. He was an Olympian at this. It was literally watching someone, you know, people came to see him open a roast because it was unexpected, bold. He set the bar for where it was going to be. And people who'd never seen him before would walk away saying, oh, my God, who was that guy?
Joan, you really are an absolutely incredible talent. You're absolutely hysterical. Every comic I know, respects you. That's a God's honest truth. Everyone thinks you're hilarious. I think you're the best. And at your age, you're still relevant, still cool, and even got a boob job just a few years ago. You're every man's dream. And by that, I mean every man that dreams of a crocodile.
And then we book friends of, you know, the roastie, and we talk to them and say, who would you like to have come? Who do you think would be good? Who do you think would be game? And then it becomes a series of conversations between me and those people, trying to kind of convince them to be on the dais, many of whom still say, I love it. I watch them every year. I'm on my couch. Nothing funnier. No way. It is a stressful, stressful dance right up until the end.
Who are your good gets to roast Trump?
The good gets, Larry King is going to roast him, which is going to be great. Marley Matlin is an old friend of Trump's. And she, I think, is going to be shocking. You know, she's a bawdy woman. And then Snoop and Mike, the Situation Sorrentino from Jersey Shore.
Good Lord.
So it is a mix. It is a mix of folks.
Has he done this before? This
he has not. He has not. He will be delivering jokes.
That is definitely going to help Mr. Trump with the younger demographic.
Exactly. Exactly. And also will deflect a lot off of him, certainly.
Make
bit.
Jokes about that guy.
Exactly. Over there.
He's really, yeah. You think I'm strange. Yeah, right.
But those are both guys that, you know, Mr. Trump is really, he just really likes them. He really likes Mike and he really likes Snoop. He just thinks they're winners and they're, you know, bold. They're good at branding. I mean, he just, those are guys that he wanted. So we said, great.
You're in the world of basic cable.
Mm-hmm.
And do you just say anything goes language-wise, content-wise in the live show and then you can edit it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't want to place any restrictions on anyone live. So, and this is certainly the show on the network where we push it. You know, the roast is there to be provocative. It is there to be the, I cannot believe they said that. And if it's not, it doesn't live up to expectation. This has become the event that people expect that from. So
yes.
We say anything goes. Then we fight tooth and nail with our standards departments to figure out what works, how far we can push something. Sometimes we'll cut a couple different versions of the show, one that airs on premiere night with some of the jokes that may be more questionable than others. And if there isn't a big outlash, then we'll let them run a few more times. I mean, we try to satisfy both the integrity of what the comics bring to the table and then what lives in posterity on air. You know, everybody always says, oh, my God, they're rough. I mean, people who are at these things can just say, oh, that was brutal. And we end up at the after party and everybody's cool. Like it's always shocking to me. I always go in nervous. I always go in just thinking this is the one. This is the one I get fired off of. This is the one where, you know, people say I'm not nice or whatever it's going to be. And it ends up being okay.
Well, but I'm a little confused because if they know what the jokes are going to be beforehand, is there just this improvisational element that you're not
I think
controlling?
The roastie does not know the jokes.
Okay.
I've heard them all. Nobody on the dais knows what anybody's going to say.
Oh, okay.
So it is all a surprise.
So you vet everybody's material one-on-one with them?
Yes. What we do, we have a writing staff who writes for the non-comics. So that material's all been vetted before. We've gone through it with them. We've rehearsed it with them. They haven't shared it, to my knowledge, amongst themselves. But those sets are all written by us. So the show's about 60% written at this point. And then comics all write their own sets. I've been doing them long enough that now I'm friendly with those guys. And so we end up going over their sets just to say, you know, does somebody have something like this? Just to kind of figure out if they're doubling up or sometimes just to punch up material. What do you think of this? So I usually know every word that's being said. There's always things that come up. I mean, people respond to a room, certainly. And some of that stuff is great. But the roastie never knows a word, and the dais doesn't know what's coming.
Well, no wonder
either.
They're nervous.
So
then.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, and even if you think you know what you're doing, and we've got people who like, we've got Snoop coming back, and Snoop got hammered during the Flav roast, laughed his head off, but he didn't know it was coming.
He wasn't the one who was supposed to be roasted.
Yeah, exactly. But the dais is fair game.
Coming up after a short break, why Seth MacFarlane and Jimmy Kimmel make for great roastmasters. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters. On Tuesday night, Comedy Central will air a roast of Donald Trump, with the likes of Larry King, Snoop Dogg, and The Situation doing the roasting. You can imagine it'll be a night of bizarre hilarity. At least that's what Comedy Central executive Elizabeth Porter hopes. As the senior vice president of specials and talent for Comedy Central, she carefully shepherds these raucous events into existence, wooing the roastee, then holding their hand through the process and working with their writers, comics, and roasters on their jokes. And while the roastee doesn't know anything that'll be said ahead of time, Porter knows everything. It's all vetted by her. Still, comedians being who they are and live events being what they become, improv and the unexpected does happen. But that's also part of the hold your breath, I can't believe they said that nature of the celebrity roast. Another key element is the MC, the roastmaster, who holds it all together when things begin to get out of hand. For Donald Trump, they've brought back the creator of Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane, who hosted the David Hasselhoff roast last year.
How do you make jokes about a joke? How do you embarrass a man who so thoroughly embarrasses himself? How do you put someone down when they're already lying shirtless on the floor? Well, that's what we're going to do tonight with the help of these D-list celebrities. We're joined tonight by the likes of George Hamilton, Hulk Hogan, Jerry Springer. This looks like the waiting room for a liver transplant.
What works? What doesn't for a MC?
MCs have to be wickedly smart, really quick, because they are ultimately the gatekeeper for the evening. So they have to be able to deal with the ebb and flow in the room, deal with people who are succeeding, failing, awkwardness. Seth is fantastic. Seth is a guy that we went out to kind of out of the blue last year. I mean, I had met him, knew how funny he was, and we just thought, here's a guy who will be a curious new voice in this. Roastmaster has been all over the place. I think Jimmy Kimmel is genius at it. I mean, he is so smart and so funny, and dealt with a roast that was out of hand, which was Pam Anderson. And he was able to, you know, really kind of police that as it came in and out of insanity.
How did he do it?
By being smart and being funny and being charming. I mean, Jimmy is just, you know, he is a winning guy and doesn't have a mean bone in his body, so he can finesse a situation, which is also true with Seth. I mean, Seth is a grown-up. He is he's a snazzy guy. He's funny. He's kind of an old-school showman. He's a little bit throwback to the kind of Dean Martin days, which I love.
Now, you said the Pam Anderson roast got out of hand. How? In what way did it get out of hand?
Pam Anderson was the first time we'd roasted a woman. She was a huge celebrity, huge sex symbol. Room was crazy. And Courtney Love was there, who was a good friend of Pam's, and at that stage was, you know, in the throes of something that was happening with
her. Let's say not manifestly sober.
That's a beautiful way to say that.
Okay, I'm trying to help.
She is such a smart woman and is...
She, Courtney. Okay.
Uh-huh. I think is actually really, really smart. And just, you know, people get a little out of control. People drink a little bit too much, get a little nervous, get a little crazy. And there was a lot of back and forth. People don't usually kind of crosstalk, as they say. There was a lot of that happening. And Jimmy was able to, you know, sit with her on the couch and kind of keep it in control. There was a joke that was made. I think Jeff Ross made it.
How is it possible that Courtney Love looks worse than Kurt Cobain?
Ooh. Now, that's one of the roughest, most hilarious jokes.
And the room to laugh just, tastelessly.
I mean, yeah, and I thought, oh, God, this is going to come to blows. But, you know, Jimmy can handle that. Jimmy can diffuse the situation. And again, because he's a professional and he's charming.
I mean, I'm wondering is she the one that got out of hand that you all talk about at Comedy Central? Or is there more than one? I'm trying to figure out whether her sexuality somehow made everybody even more juvenile than they were, or this was really more about Courtney Love being a little bit in her cups, apparently.
I don't think it was Pam. You know, Pam is a woman who did it for charity. She came in to do that for PETA and to raise awareness for PETA. She knew what she was getting into. She certainly was a full participant in her life up until that point. I think she's a lovely, giving humanitarian, but she's not a person who says, oh, no, I wasn't a Playboy bunny. Oh, no, I wasn't married to Tommy Lee. Or, you know, none of that is true. But I think women are hard. I mean, Joan was another one where, you know, the concern was Joan at the time was a 76-year-old woman. So even though she is the first to make jokes about herself, she's still a woman and she's a grandmother. You know, and what I said to her in one of the lunches that I had with her beforehand, I said, listen, the thing that makes me feel better is I remember growing up and you were the one who cracked jokes about Amy Carter. You made jokes about Amy Carter. She was a child. And she did it in the name of comedy. And so I thought anything that comes at you, she said, I've heard it all. But that was one in the room where when it started and the first couple really hard plastic surgery jokes came, people were kind of like, is this okay? And Joan was laughing, but she was reserved. You know, she was kind of in and out of having a good time, I think. But, it's like people always say, could you roast someone? Could you roast a franchise? Could you roast the city of New York? Could you roast somebody who's passed away? Could you? And I said, no, because the beauty of the roast is that intense awkwardness of watching that happen between two people, of watching a joke being delivered and watching someone respond. That is what a roast is. That's where that lives, is that tension and that kind of comedy.
Is there someone that you would love to roast and have begged to roast that you could tell
us
about?
I have begged. Charlie Sheen was a first call almost every year for years.
So much now, yeah.
kind of, before everything happened here. But he was always going to be a great target.
And he didn't want to do it.
He never wanted to do it. I always ask Alec Baldwin. I always ask George Clooney. I always ask a bunch of people. But
so are you going to try and roast Sarah Palin? Is she on your wish list?
If you don't think we've thought about that and talked about that, it would be great. I mean, we always said Clinton, and I thought, oh, my God, how much money could I give to Bill Clinton, to give to Sudan, to give to, what could I do to just get that guy? But, a girl can dream.
I mean, do you now, after the Courtney Love experience, say, this person is just a little too screwed up to have on our dais?
I would never say that. I literally wouldn't
say it, or you would never.
But I wouldn't
think
do
it.
No, I would. I mean, I wouldn't book someone who I would think knowingly would. There's people that get suggested to me that I think would just be trouble. And while it might be great TV, it's certainly not a great live event. So I wouldn't do that on purpose, because that's not what we're going for. We're going for a great night of comedy. And it really is ultimately, the show we're building for Trump is for Trump. I'm not trying to build something around him that's going to surprise him and go off the rails, because that's not what a roast is.
You're aiming for this little sweet spot, which is awkward, bordering on painful, but not hideous.
No, that's exactly it. Or it can be hideous, as long as it's funny. I mean, honest okay. to God, there are things that in my line is way further out than a lot of people's. And that's probably why I'm a good person to oversee these shows. I mean, my sense of humor is particularly dark, I've been told, and a little blue. But, my goal is to push it. And I fight for what people want to say, and I fight for comedians, and I fight for the writers. So, you want to have it be pretty outlandish. I mean, I want these to be raucous events because, you get to do it once a year.
Elizabeth Porter is Senior Vice President of Specials and Talent for Comedy Central. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Kim.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. I'm the executive producer, Matt Holzman. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. You can hear us on your phone with our iPhone and Android apps, and we're on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/kcrwthebusiness. Go there and tell us that you like us. You really like us. And of course, you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
You can imagine Hollywood. Everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood. Hollywood.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.